I like that idea. Could be short. I told Jaden she might have to pull the fire alarm. Because I have not been nervous to speak in front of y'all in a little while. But this makes me nervous. This topic makes me nervous. But I wholeheartedly believe that the hard topics in the Bible are probably the most important to go over. So today, if y'all have been following or doing the Sermon on the Mount once a week, like Kevin has asked for y'all to do, I think that is a important thing. So if y'all are already read up on it, you know that today's topic is divorce. And let me start with this. This is a little pre-sermon soapbox. Marriage is a godly institution. It was set forth at creation. God created man and wife. God created man and woman to be together. It was how it was intended to be. Outside of God, it makes no sense. Now, what do I mean by that? There's not much financial sense in it. There's a lot more risk than reward if you're not devoting your marriage to God. There's a lot of downfall, heartbreak, a lot of rough that marriage can encapsulate aside from God. And so that's my little soapbox. Much like last week, what you put into it, what you put into your heart, out of the heart, the overflow will come. What you put into your marriage and base your marriage about is how it's going to shape up. A lot of y'all are probably rolling your eyes because I've only been married for 5 years, but I feel like it's a milestone, so we're going to work through it together here. Again, uncomfortable topic. I'm going to start this way much like I did last week, and that is with context. By that I mean we're going to skip over the anger section because we did it last week, but I'm going to start in verse 17 of chapter 5. Again, this we've just been going through the Sermon on the Mount, and I think it's a shortcoming of us that oftentimes we skip over the uncomfortable, though I am uncomfortable. And let me just explain some uncomfort here. Divorce rates in the church are almost as high as outside of the church. I have known some very close people to me recently that are going through this. People raised in the church, people. It's almost as if nobody's exempt. It's almost as if dark thoughts probably start to creep in to some folks when this conversation gets brought up. Inner reflection on your own marriage as what I do frequently when this gets brought up. When somebody that you know and respect for a long time goes through this and it hits you out of nowhere. I'm sure you all have stories of it. And so we're going to go over it to the best of my ability. I'm going to try and add context to what we read today. And hope that some of this sets in. So, Matthew chapter 5, verse 17. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven, but whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. That's how Christ, in this moment where he's talking to his disciples amongst a larger crowd, chooses to tee up these next things that we go to. There's six what I've heard called, and I kind of like it, case studies. We went over anger. Kevin went over anger. We went over lust last week. Today's divorce, and then there's three more after it. So these case studies, he chooses to tee up by saying, I am not here to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. What does that mean for us? Is that there is some value and intent spent on the law. And so I also want to set up, Christ is often tested by the Pharisees. Correct? We can probably all think of certain moments where Pharisees choose to try to pick apart what Christ says, to tear him down, to prove that he is not the Messiah. And large probably because, number one, when he shows up, he's not what a lot of people are hoping for. Right? They're expecting this kingdom to come, the king, an earthly king, to rule over the people, to bring them back into prevalence. Because what are they living as right now? Slaves. They're either actually slaves or they're enslaved by a government that imposes heavy taxes. They're not living for themselves. And what their desire is to go back into that time of Solomon, of David, of these great kings that they had that established the Israelite people as a kingdom amongst earth that is to be reckoned with, that provides protection, riches, freedoms, all the stuff that sound nice to us today. They were probably hoping, they were probably expecting this, and what do they get? The most humble man to ever walk the earth. A man that gets down on his knees and washes the filthy feet of his disciples. This whole thing turns upside down on his head, what people are expecting when they're thinking about the Messiah. And so, first, he's not who they're expecting. When something happens that you're not expecting, a lot of times we have a tendency to push back, right? So, common response, they push back. Second thing is, he's preaching a lot of stuff they probably don't like. He's talking about a lot of issues that hit home. He's calling out the shortcomings of the Pharisees and the Sadducees when all the people around them are looking up and putting them on a pedestal because it looks like they have a lot of stuff right. So he's tearing down these social constructs. He's making waves. And so their reaction is to test him, to try to diminish him, to make sure that people know, to try and catch him in a verbal game, a verbal trap, and get him to say something that he knows that they know is not right. They're trying to get him to say something to contradict the books, the Word of God that they already have. And so they set traps for him. And we're going to read this section. We're also going to read a little bit. It's described a little bit more in depth later in Matthew. So, verse 31. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, we're going to get into this a little bit more, but I want to bring into context what's going on. It's talking pretty prevalently to males right here. And I want y'all to understand the reason for that is because in old Jewish culture, who initiated it? The male. Women didn't have a lot of rights, right? And so the male initiates this. And what he's trying to bring home, and I think we get tied up in this, but what he's trying to bring home is, but I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife except on the grounds of sexual immorality makes her commit adultery. Makes her. That is a forceful statement, is it not? Let's go over it. Olden times, as a female, if you're divorced, your chances of getting remarried are very high. Right? Because what does a woman need back then? She's either going to go back to her family of old, or she's going to get remarried. And so what this is saying is, and this is where I'm going to divert, and I'm going to go later to Matthew, but there's this institution, this godly institution of marriage. What does it say? You become, two become one flesh. Two become one flesh. When you enter into marriage, two are becoming one flesh. What do you do when you send that away? You're tearing it apart. You're tearing it apart. And as a man, if this is on you, and we're going to go over this, I'm not going to read it because I know everybody's going to get hungry and it's going to go potluck. But I'm going to mention two things that I hope y'all, if y'all are curious, I hope you never just take what I say as the gospel truth. I hope y'all look into it more on your own. But in the olden days, when we get into Deuteronomy, the law says if a man sends his wife away, he must give his wife a certificate of divorce. There's these houses. By houses, I would probably say these are like the Harvard, the Oxford, all these big colleges. There's houses. The House of Shammal and the House of Hillel are two of the big houses that are studying the teachings back then. And so what do two separate people extract from that law? One extracts the sexual immorality. If there's sexual immorality, then you have a right to divorce your wife. The other one says if there's anything unpleasing that you find about your wife, then you have a right to send her away. Wow. These are two Jewish scholars teaching. They have disciples, much like Christ would, teaching two completely different things. And so this is a charged topic of the time. When we read here in a second on Matthew, what I read is an example of the Pharisees coming up to Christ. And what are they trying to do in this subject? They're trying to get him to trip on his words. Why? Because this is one of the most charged topics that there is these days. This is something that they're like, man, if I can just get them to say something kind of off, then I can stick them with it, right? If I can get them to say that, yes, it's okay to divorce your wife, then I'm going to stick them with it. And here's where we're going to get to, and this is, again, I hope we listen to Christ's points when he reads this, when he talks about it. Let me pull it up. I tried to do something fancy today and it didn't work. We're going to flip to Matthew chapter 19 in verse 1. These last couple chapters are Pharisees testing Christ, and this is what he says. When Jesus had finished saying these things, he left Galilee and went into the region of Judea. To the other side of the Jordan, large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. Some Pharisees came to him to test him. They asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Why, I gave you all the context predating this is because their question is a trap. And I want us to see that. This isn't a, hey, let's see what Christ thinks. This is a, hey, let's see if we can make him stumble. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? This is going back to one of those common teachings that if you find anything that you don't like about your wife, you can send her off. That's your right. Here's what Christ says. Haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female and said, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and will be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Here's Jesus' response. This is why I wanted to flip over here. Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. The disciples said to him, if this is the situation between husband and wife, it is better not to marry. What? Jesus replied, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by others. And there are those who chose to live like eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. The one who can accept this should accept it. Christ breaks it down. He says, they push him, right? They push him. And Christ has this amazing way of I hate to even say this, but I'm going to say politician. That's a political response. He says, he did this, Moses gave you the command, because why? Your hearts were hard. You already are pushing away what God made to be in the very beginning. You're pushing it away, and because that is rampant, and people are pushing away their wives and moving on with their lives without them, putting them in the past, what's happening? There's this huge mess. And who's being taken advantage of? In this day and age, it was the women. Because they get pushed away and there's no certificate. They're just in no man's land, right? And Christ, from the very beginning, is saying, that is wrong. So why did I even give you this command? So that you would start taking care of people. So that when you push your wife away, what does it make her do? Right? So I'm not saying it's right, but when you push her away, she still has an opportunity to live life. Because what we're doing here and what's been done for years and years and generations is wrong. But the only reason that this even had to be spoken of is because y'all's hearts are hard and you're not doing this for the right reasons, and you're not putting into your marriage what needs to be put into your marriage. The only way a divorce is scary is if you're married, right? Right. The only way divorce is scary is if you're not binding a marriage around something stable. The only thing I know on God's green earth that is stable is God. If my marriage was dependent on me, not be good. Right? Because I'm unstable. Mentally. A little bit. Sometimes. I wish I could be the rock. I try to be the rock. But just as if you tie your faith into someone else, if I tied my faith into my father and something rocks his world, guess what happens? We're both gone. If I tie into the one thing that's stable, that matters, that's always consistent, which is Christ, and something rocks my Father's world, guess what I get to do? I get to help bring him back. But if we both fell off the rocker, then what hope is there? So if Jaden's tying into me and our marriage is about how good of a husband I am, we're not going to last very long. Because I try to be that for her. But other days I come home and you're like, please leave. Right? You have a rough day at work, you struggle with something, and you bring it home, you don't leave it on the doorstep for whatever reason, because you're not perfect, you're human, and you walk inside, and you have this argument that's about nothing. Right? If she's not tethered off to God, if I'm not tethered off to God, guess what starts to happen? Separation. So much like we talked about lust, what you put into your heart is what comes out. What you put into your marriage comes out. And Lord willing that everybody sitting in here is putting what into their marriage? God. Because if you get a tie on to something consistent, boy, amazing things happen. If I'm going to tie into Jaden and she has a rough day with the kids, which... right now, terrible twos. It happens, right? I would love to say 50%, maybe 30-70. And I come home and she's frustrated and she's angry. Guess what I do if I'm not tethered into God? Boy, we start to get frustrated together. Does it happen? Yeah, but man, I start really getting on to Brooks. And I start arguing with my wife about little dumb stuff. Because what? I had a good day and I come home and I expect that when I come home after a good day, then it can be a good day and I'm allowed to have a good day and all this junk. What should my responsibility be as a husband? To take everything that's going down right here and to bring it up. Right? To not get washed away with the circumstances. The frustrations that you're a little knucklehead sometimes, aren't you? He's hiding because he knows it's true. For her not to get sucked into my circumstances, which, man, I have a lot of irritations throughout the day. Man, I've got a bunch of employees and I've got a ton of customers. And guess what? You can look at everything for bad, like, man, I wish I could just take a break. Or you can look at it for good and say, thank God for the opportunities that I have to come into contact with these people to share Him. Thank you for putting me in the place to be able to do this. Sounds like a vastly different perspective. So when God talks about marriage, when God is going to enlighten us as how marriage is to be. And let me tell you, this is important, because what does Christ say the church, or what does God say that Christ is to the church? Bridegroom. So when we're getting all these things about marriage, we should kind of lock in. Because not only is it my duties to Jaden, is it Jaden's duties to me, it's our duties to Christ. It's the church's duties to Him. So lock down. So tether into something that stays consistent. When He responds, He said, I'll just read it because I'm paraphrasing way too much. Haven't you read, at the beginning the Creator made them male and female, and said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife. And the two will become one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together. Again, who's joined together? What God has joined together, let no man separate. Read this and try to make marriage make sense outside of God. It's a recipe for heartache. It's a recipe for disaster. Why? Because it was intended for this beautiful purpose. Much like all the other things we've been reading about, the intention is good and it's pure and it was created that way. And what do humans like to do? Tweak it. Or completely contort it. And he keeps going. I'm going to read it again because it's so good. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Again, they're not looking for... the first part was a great answer. But what are they after? They just want something to stump them. Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. God's laws, even in Deuteronomy, the weirdest laws that you can come up with, right? If your ox gores another man and you don't put it to death and he gores another, then who dies? You do, right? And okay, this is, I'm going to bring it home, I promise. That sounds super weird, right? But what does God care about? The community. So if you have something that you know is a detriment to what's going on around you, and you don't do anything about it, the blame falls on you. So you take all these laws that were written, and I want us to realize that the purpose of it at the beginning was to protect a group of people who are not being treated properly. Protect women. Because guess what? You take God out of marriage, and this isn't a new thing. This has been there since however many BC this was written in Deuteronomy. If you take God out of the marriage, what were the men doing? They were running around, taking multiple wives, abandoning them. And what's God trying to do? Take care of them. And the only reason that had to happen in the first place was because God's people hardened their heart. Because God's people were trying to tear apart what God had intended in the first place. There's a lot of young people, maybe not a ton, and Brooks probably isn't listening right now because I think he's got a snack. He looked at me. But I hope what I can instill in him, and I hope if there's any of the younger folks that are listening today that are probably to be wed one day, another incredibly rampant occurrence in this time was people of Israel. You see it even in Solomon. What was Solomon's downfall? Started taking foreign women. What did those women do? They turned his eyes away from God. Whether male or female, the young folks in here, I hope, I pray for you as I pray for my own son, that one day you find a godly spouse and you build a marriage rooted on God. Because there's a lot of reasons people get married nowadays, right? It's only one right one. It's a godly institution. You take that out of it, and it will be the most miserable experience of your life. I'm wholeheartedly convicted of that. I've heard that since the time I was little. And I hope y'all hear it today. And I hope for the folks that are married, myself included, because I need this frequently. Like I said, I'm unstable. I hope today points us back to what's important. I hope today's the start of a good run. I hope today's the start of us getting God back into our marriages. Because the reason behind divorce, whether it's in the church or out of the church, it's because we take God out of it. We have this weird, twisted ideology that people in the church don't take God out of your marriage. I've taken God out of my marriage. Guess what happens? Not good things. I've made it just about two people living and parenting together. Guess what happens? Not good things. We're all susceptible to it. But we all have the opportunity. It is amazing to see a lot of the marriages in this church. How long have y'all been married? 58? Y'all probably haven't beat, huh? 65, he thinks. After 60, then you can think. Was it easy? Kind of for him? Make it about God. Everything that we're supposed to do, whether it's work, whatever it is, make it about God. Whether it's waking up in the morning at the butt crack of dawn to go do something that you really don't want to do, make it about God. If we really, 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 really want to look at Christ's life and see what it tells us, Christ lived for God. So what does that mean? Every step of our lives, every relationship in our lives, every whatever you want to say should be saturated, soaking with God. That's going to start to change some things. You feel like things are rocky at home? Point it back to something that's stable. That'll start to change some things. I hope as we go on about our weeks, I made my wife pray for me a lot. Something that I wasn't super excited to talk about. But I hope when we get into these situations where we see something that may be uncomfortable, we decide to dig in. Because there's probably something profound at the end of it. Kevin left me with two doozies. He's back on the easy train next week, so y'all can get the JV out of here and the varsity back. And if he shows up on TV shirtless, Now y'all know where I get it from. Thank y'all for being here. Please, if whatever you're doing in life that doesn't seem as colorful as it used to be, put some color back into it. Make it about God. I think we've probably all had this experience, but I'm going to say it. The other day, Brooks was being a knucklehead, and Bodie was being an incredibly fussy baby, and Jaden was absolutely tired, understandably. And I remember calling her on the phone, knowing that it was frustrating, and I'm not great at this, I'm working at this, but this was last week. One specific day, I got to come home, and inject some life into a situation. And we had an amazing night with the boys. Attitudes turned. It's amazing what a little different perspective and some energy brings to everything. And the only way you can tether onto something like that is to tether onto God. I hope whatever it is in your life, y'all choose Him. Whatever's struggling, y'all make it a point to make it about God. Because if y'all do that, guess what happens? His plan plays out. And something I've told Jaden, something I've told my brother for a long time, is God's plan is so much bigger than you or I could ever imagine. So give it over. If there's anything we can do for you this afternoon, I'd ask you to come grab somebody as we stand and sing an invitation.